get started. It is Tuesday, December 3rd, 2019, at 5:06 p.m. We are meeting in the Sierra Hills Community Center. We will start with a pledge given by Councilmember Anderson and a invocation given by Councilmember Miller.
Please rise and join me in the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our Father in heaven, we are grateful to gather as a city council this evening to discuss the matters that are important to the city. For all those in attendance, for their care and concern for the well-being of our city, we ask that God bless this meeting, that I be inspired, that we will be guided to make the decisions best for the residents, that we will be mindful of them and our responsibilities. So, in the name of Jesus Christ.
Thank you. Moving on to item number two, I just need an approval of the meeting's agenda.
I move that we approve the meeting's agenda.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second? Seconded by Councilmember Bailey. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. So we will move on to item number three, which is public comment. We have a fantastic turnout today. This is the best turnout we've had all year about monarch butterflies. And so I'm going to have you guys hold off for just a couple of minutes because we're going to do a resolution on it, and I'm going to have you speak during that time, okay? But is there anybody here that was wanted to speak during public comment that was not about monarch butterflies? Okay, then we're going to close the public comment portion of our meeting and move on to items 4 and 5, which are city reports of business, starting with Mr. Goodwin.
Yes, I only have a few items. Just as a reminder, the golf course is closed. That is closed to golfers and sledding, so please, no sledding on the golf course. We also would like to thank the Beautification Committee. They hosted their annual Santa Night last night here in the Vista Room, and it was well attended. It was a great event, so thank you to the committee for showing up and dedicating their night and their time to such a wonderful event. And then the last thing I wanted to emphasize was to just reiterate, please no on-street parking during snow events or overnight, as on-street parking makes it more difficult for our plows to go up and down streets, and it makes it a little more challenging. So we request that residents please do not park on the streets when they see snow or during a snow event. So thank you.
Councilmember Anderson.
So I don't have anything to report, but I would like to add to that comment about not parking on the street and also to not snow blow into the street. I know it's tempting to not snow blow into yards, but when the clouds come by, then we snow blow into the street and it does their work. So I just want to add that.
All right, thank you. Councilmember Ellsworth.
Nothing.
Councilmember Miller. Nothing. Councilmember Bailey.
No, I just appreciate everybody showing up for my last council meeting.
Councilmember Bailey's last council meeting, so we appreciate the service that you've given to the city over the past 4 years, and thank you. All right, so we move on to item number six, which is a review action on a resolution supporting the improvement of the available monarch butterfly habitat in the city of Cedar Hills. And we are fortunate tonight to have Mrs. Stevens' class here today. Mrs. Stevens, I have a list of everybody who signed up. Do you want me to call them off by name, or do they have a particular order they need to go in?
They don't have an order.
Okay, so we will start with Audrey Thornton. So if you can just start by stating your full name.
Hi, my name is Audrey Thornton, and I'm going to be talking about monarch butterflies. Save monarch butterflies. Milkweed is a plant monarchs live on and eat. Why monarchs live on it and eat it is because it is the only food the monarch caterpillar can eat, and milkweed is poisonous to other animals. Monarchs eat it because it has poison in it. If other animals try to eat the monarch, the animal will die. The animal can die eating the monarch butterfly. Milkweed is important. What you can do. You can hand out milkweed seeds to people and tell them if you get milkweed seeds, then you have to plant it. We bought milkweed seeds right here in Lehigh and gave it to the students at Cedar Ridge. We want to save the monarchs by planting milkweed. You can help by trying to do these things too. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Annette Steven.
I'm a proud teacher, and I want to thank the mayor for coming to our classroom and Mr. Chapman for taking interest in our project. Since the 1980s, the population of Western monarch butterflies declined from 3 million to fewer than 30,000 in the winter of 2018-2019. That's a 99% decline. According to Frontiers in Ecology and Evolution, Western monarchs are currently in danger. Their status reflects a long-term decline due to some combinations of habitat loss, overwintering and breeding range, increased pesticide use, and possibly climate change. There was one man in California, Tim Long, and he is repopulating a rare and endangered California butterfly. It started with just him and his backyard. He grew that project until neighbors, cities, and counties were involved. He credits his success to improving the butterfly's habitat. So as individuals, I'd like us to think what we can do. Each one of us can help improve the monarch butterfly's habitat. You might be a hiker, or a mountain biker, or even a walker. You can take the seeds with you and just fluff up the ground with your foot and then drop the seeds and pat them down to connect with the dirt. That's all it takes. You can put meddling in a potted plant on your patio and watch your grandchildren and children enjoy the butterflies as they come. As members of the city council, you could design empty areas for milkweed seed to grow. You can educate citizens through social media or city newsletters. You can encourage citizens to plant milkweed by having seeds sitting in the city office building. You can encourage roving ground crews to scatter seeds in appropriate places. You can celebrate the monarch during City Hill's family festivals and the parades. We'd be happy to help. You can work with other cities to create a monarch pathway to help them survive as they migrate. Tonight I brought you some milkweed seeds. And milkweed seeds are pretty extraordinary. You can plant them in the fall right now. They need the cold weather to germinate to grow quickly. But if you needed to wait till spring, just pop them in your freezer for 3 or 4 days and pull them out in the spring and plant them. Monarchs do need our help. We can help them by improving their habitat, and I hope that we can work together and grow this project. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, next is Dax Black.
Hi, my name is Dax. I'm going to talk about what you can do to save monarchs. Have you noticed that you don't see that many monarchs? That's because they're dying. You need your help to save them.
Thank you. Everybody, man.
Help save monarch butterflies. Milkweed's main food. Milkweed is important to monarch butterflies. It is important because monarchs lay their eggs on it. The caterpillar eats it, and it is used for many things. Milkweed is poisonous to other animals. Monarchs use milkweed to lay their eggs on. Then they hang their chrysalis on it. Finally, as an adult, they use the nectar from the milkweed plant to eat. Milkweed is used their whole life. If other animals eat milkweed or the butterfly, they instantly die. Monarchs use milkweed. They love milkweed. Show me milkweed is native to Utah. Things you can do to help. Plant milkweed. Stop using weed killer on milkweed. Don't mow areas that have milkweed. Plant flowers in spring and summer, and then plant milkweed while it's best time.
Lacey Talley.
Hi, my name is Lacey Talley, and I'm going to talk about milkweed. Milkweed is important because the monarch butterfly lays its eggs on it. Milkweed is also the only host plant a monarch caterpillar can eat. The milkweed is poisonous to other animals. The monarch predators see the bright colors and stay away from the monarchs. Things you can do. Plant milkweed along hiking trails, join monarch clubs, and stop using meat oil.
Thank you. Mercedes Holly.
Hi, my name is Mercedes Holly, and I'm going to talk about how to save the monarch and why they're important to us. The monarch butterfly in the western United States is going extinct, and we need as much help as we can get to save them. So we need you to help plant milkweed too. We need milkweed because the only thing monarch caterpillars eat is milkweed. Why do we want to save the monarch butterfly? Well, the monarch populations have been declining for several years due to many factors. Monarchs are also important to the Mexican culture because on the Day of the Dead, monarchs from all around the world come to Mexico on the Day of the Dead, Mexican people think the monarchs are their ancestors coming to visit them.
Thank you. Davis Chase.
My name is Davis Chase. Why do monarchs eat milkweed? I'll tell you. Number one, caterpillars need to eat milkweed so that they become poisonous. Number two, a butterfly lays its eggs on it too. What you can do to help. Number one, plant milkweed. Number two, no more weed kill. Number three, no more cream dump trees. Thank you.
Hannah Flake.
Hi, my name is Hannah Flake. I'm talking about monarch butterflies. Why should we save the monarchs? We want you to save the monarchs because there are only 30,000 left. The monarch butterfly is dying because people are killing milkweed. How you can help? 1. Plant milkweed. 2. Do not kill the milkweed. 3. See if monarchs will come. 4. Do not hurt the monarch eggs.
Thank you. Ashton Lloyd.
Hello, my name is Ashton Lloyd. My thoughts why we should save monarchs. I think we should save monarchs because they are amazing and pretty animals. How are they amazing? Well, they have teeny tiny compasses in their brain that show them the exact way to get to Mexico. Another way they are amazing is that they can only lay their eggs on a special kind of plant. They are pretty because how their wings are designed. Their wings are orange with black spots all over and with black lines spread around. Did you know that those lines on their wings are their veins? Remember when I said they can only bathe their egg on a special kind of plant? That plant is milkweed. It protects the larva. It is the only plant the larva can eat. The larva molds its chrysalis on the milkweed plant. The adult butterfly will eat the nectar from the flowers on the plant. Monarchs need milkweed to survive.
Thank you. Stetson Vincent.
Hello, my name is Stetson Vincent, and I'll be talking about monarchs. Why do monarchs need milkweed? Monarchs need milkweed to lay eggs on, and monarchs need milkweed for the monarch caterpillar to eat. It is the only plant the caterpillar can eat. The milkweed exposes to other animals. It makes the monarch poisonous to predators like birds.
Thank you. Mackenzie Lockie.
My name is Mackenzie Walken. Why milkweed is important? The monarchs lay their eggs on the milkweed plant. Once the eggs hatch, the caterpillar eats the milkweed. The milkweed is so big, there is a ball or pod with milkweed seeds. The ball opens up and the milkweed seeds are blown out of the pod. What you can do? Plant milkweed, find out more about milkweed and monarch butterflies, encourage more people to want to plant milkweed, please.
Thank you. Mary Hansen.
Hi, my name is Mary Hansen. I'm 8 years old and I'm in third grade. Monarchs, you might be wondering why we want to save these butterflies. Well, they mean a lot to us in the world we share. They are pollinators, they help flowers, trees, and many other plants. I would hate to see them go, and I know you would too. One wrong move and they could go extinct. So please help so these amazing butterflies can live forevermore. Thank you for letting me come today. Bye.
Thank you. Is there anyone who wasn't on my list that wanted to speak tonight?
The Beautification Committee. My partner and I were asked to talk about the Beautification Committee. The Beautification Committee helps flower beds, parks, and all of Cedar Hills get ready. We want the committee to plan for areas that milkweed can be planted and taken care of.
Can you tell me your name?
Bryce.
Riley. Thank you, Riley. Anyone else that I missed? Okay. Oh, sorry. Okay. All right. So, Council, we received several letters from Mrs. Stevens' class about the monarch butterfly and milkweed and the presentation that you just heard today. And so Chandler and I arranged for a time to go out and meet with Mrs. Stevens' class. And they each presented their presentation that they gave today as well. And what we provided with Mrs. Stevens' class was a map of areas in the city where milkweed could be planted. So some of that was, if I remember Chandler, it was up by Silver Lake, on St. Andrews Estate, areas where we have native areas where
milkweed
would work.
Correct.
So we presented that and we were given some seeds as well, but one of the things that we promised is that we would pass a resolution in support of this effort that Mrs. Stevens' class is engaged in as well. So I'm going to read this resolution and then the council is going to vote on it, and then we're going to take a couple minutes recess and ask for those who are interested if we can just go against that back wall and do a picture with you guys. Would that be okay? Okay. So this is what the resolution says. It says, a resolution of the City Council of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah, supporting the improvement of the available monarch butterfly habitat in the City of Cedar Hills. Whereas the monarch butterfly is an iconic North American species whose multi-generational immigration and metamorphosis from caterpillar to butterfly has captured the imagination of millions of Americans, and whereas scientific studies point to the rapid decline of the monarch butterfly due to the loss of native milkweed habitat needed to lay their eggs, and for their caterpillars to eat, resulting in development, land management practices, and chemically aided agriculture. And whereas Cedar Hills Code allows and promotes native landscaping, which reduces emissions and pesticide fertilizer runoff. And whereas Cedar Hills promotes health and wellness, which includes an active connection to the environment and use of area green space, naturalized areas, parks, and regional trails. And whereas cities, towns, and counties have a critical role to help save the monarch butterfly, now therefore be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah will support improving and increasing the monarch butterfly habitat through the identification of land where native milkweed and nectar plants can be appropriately incorporated into existing and new plantings. Any questions or comments from the council before we take a vote?
I have a comment. I am so proud of you for coming and teaching us about the monarch butterfly. And just like you, the monarch butterfly was my favorite butterfly all growing up. And the migration pattern was right over where I lived, and so I got to see that. And it was always my favorite butterfly. And I grow milkweed in my yard for the monarch butterfly. So thank you for helping us learn about the monarch butterfly today.
Thank you, Councilor Robson. Anyone else?
I'd just say thank you for coming in and teaching us about monarch butterflies and milkweed. I learned today that there's something pretty easy that I can do to help monarch butterflies. I wasn't aware of that before. Now I can have milkweed seeds with me and hopefully promote the presence of monarch butterflies here and build up its population throughout. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Council, I will take a motion on this resolution.
I would like to make a motion that we approve Resolution 12-3-2019A, a resolution supporting the improvement of the available monarch butterfly habitat in the City of Cedar Hills.
Motion made by Councilmember Ellsworth. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Miller. Councilmember Bailey.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Take a couple minute break with the council. If you'll just join me in the back and we'll take a picture with Mrs. Stevens' class. Let's move on to item number 7, which is a review action and public hearing on amendments to Flat K Canyon Heights at Cedar Hills Subdivision. And for good.
Sorry, back to the boring stuff.
may recall that this item was in a similar fashion before the City Council, let's say about 2 months ago. One of the issues that was not changed, and the owner did not see that until after the replat had been reported, was that this is the plat that was reported, which is not that that's too much better, but anyway, what you see here is
what do you need?
A pointer.
Here.
Going. This lot has a non-standard front setback. It's a very tricky lot to build on in that from the rear lot line here, this is Tipco Road right here. From the rear lot line to this point right here, there's a 50-foot Utah power line, Rocky Mountain power easement. And we join two flats together, and this crosshatched area here is a slope failure zone that is identified on the plat as a non-buildable area. Additionally, you can see this line that comes in and turns here, that is an aqueduct easement. So there's a lot of, and then this dark gray area here is a storm drain easement. So pretty much everything south of this line here is unusable land. Everything east of this line is unusable land. But they have this non-standard setback here that runs from this point to the road, to the property line, is 30 feet. And as it extends back, it was just extended on its trajectory when it was reported. It wasn't changed at all. So from this point, you're looking at maybe 100 feet. It's quite the setback. There are some steep slopes here on the front of the home. However, they brought in fill material, and the building that they're proposing to build is set down into the ground quite deep, where they're going to be building on native soil. So they're proposing that there be a adjustment to that non-standard setback. So rather than it continuing on, away from the property line, at some point it heads south, directly south, and create a more usable building along here on the south end of the property. We've had the city engineer review this, and he's requesting that they provide a geotech test kit from that area showing that the building that they're proposing is going to be stable on that slope. We have not today received that test. I received an email from the homeowner yesterday. They're about 2 or 3 weeks out from that test being, that those test results coming back. So at this point, we do have a public hearing, so we will need to hold a public hearing on this. But I would ask that the City Council table this until the test result, the city engineer has reviewed all those results from the geotech test.
Any questions from the council? Okay. So we'll open the public hearing. Is there anybody that is here today to speak on this item? All right. We will close the public hearing, and I will take a motion from the council on tabling that item.
I will move that we table item number 7.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Ellsworth. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Moving on to item number 8. It's a review action on granting an exception to the driveway slope located at 10090 North Lakeshore Drive, Lot 3, Flat A in the Lakeshore Trail Subdivision.
Yes. The home, you may see it, it's up on the Lakeshore Trails. It's been a corner. But the home was built a little bit higher than the approved plans. And as a result, the driveway slope is much greater than what's allowed by city code. City code allows an 80% driveway up to 12% with the city council exception being granted. This is far beyond that. This is about 30%. Staff raised concerns about the slope of the driveway in terms of how public safety would be able to respond to this home in case of a snow event where it was ice over. The fire marshal for American Fork did go out on site and did go look at the slope and did say that this would be very difficult and there would be a chance that they would not be able to respond. We raised those concerns with the homeowner and we, at the time we required them to put in steps. However, there is no city code or building code requirement that says that you have, if the driveway exceeds a certain percentage of slope, that steps would be required. So we can't require steps. We can recommend steps, and that's what we will continue to do on this property, and that we feel that the driveway presents a unique challenge for public safety responding, for any responding public safety personnel. However, we're asking the council to grant an exception to allow this driveway, and as I think follow-up from this is the city staff, we need to look at our driveway code in terms of slopes and what the chief building official may require, and that he be adopt a code that over a certain percentage of slope that the building official can require steps to be installed. Those would be code required or code compliance steps that would allow public safety personnel to access the property in case of an emergency during the inclement weather. Are there any questions on this that I can clarify or answer?
I have a question. Is there something in the building file for this home that says?
Yes, there's a number of things. There's a letter from the building official, Jeff Mogg. There's some notes that Jeff Mogg typed up following the meeting with Matt Seiko, the fire marshal. There's a letter that I wrote that addresses this concern of public safety not being able to access the property. So there's quite a number of documents that are in the building file for future discovery should all be sold. To me, it's imperative that the homeowner understand that although we can change the code in the future to require future driveways to put in code compliance steps, we can't require this of you. However, we strongly recommend that this is something that you consider doing.
Chairman, so we have the Strong's house that fell out 3 or 4 years ago. It's kind of a similar situation. My recommendation would be to go back to the fire marshal and have the fire marshal's office come up with a plan to make this home safe for potential fires. Like with the Strong's, there's no way that they can get a fire engine or any of that. So the compromise was to have sprinklers there.
With
the fire marshal, there again, I would recommend just going back and talking with him. With structure fire, it doesn't look like wildland fires are going to be affected here, but also EMS.
And so I think EMS is the bigger concern.
So that EMS can get in and out as well.
So that is the concern that the fire marshal had, and we've shared that concern with the Taylors on this. The thing that we're up against is they do not want to install the stairs that were recommended, and we don't have anything in our code that can require it.
Right, but the fire marshal can. Under the fire, like I said, the Strong's, there's things that the fire marshal, due to public safety, can require.
What you know more about this than I do, but it seems like because they were so far away from the fire hydrant in the Strong's case, some fire suppression system could be required by the fire marshal. In this case, it's similar but different in that it's not necessarily fire suppression is the issue, but given the slope of the driveway, if it's iced over and there's no steps, getting a gurney or getting somebody down safely is going to present quite a challenge. So I wonder if there is it an NFPA standard that they can enact?
How close to the street is the house?
Standard setback was maybe 30 feet.
They're not worried about fire at all. They're only worried about EMS.
That won't work. However, with that type of angle, it could be the fire marshal could put the our under. So the fire marshal has basically not free reign, but. If there's a clause or clauses in there that if there's any other things that the fire marshal deems as a hazard or to his firefighters or her firefighters or the general public in general, then they can require certain things in order to make it safe, such as with things that go on the roof. Of a home or a business, like solar panels, they can be real tight, or they can loosen them, just kind of how they see fit, because then the firefighters are going to be the ones that are responsible to get into that structure. And so, if they deem that it's necessary for their firefighters to safely get into a structure of any type, meaning a home or a business or whatever, then they can require those. Now, if it's just we just want, you know, our firefighters can do it, but we want you to do these stairs. Then you know, we can't force that. But if it's a safety issue to emergency responders, then the fire marshal's office can require that.
Well, and I can see where I'll reach out to fire marshal and have that conversation with him. But I think this also goes back to maybe a larger issue in that we have a great portion of our city that's built on the hillside, and the driveways there are steep in a lot of cases. And we need to have a way to the building official to say, yes, you can have a steep driveway, but this is the circumstance that you were building here that is compliant to what you're
doing. I agree with that.
So I think that's the logical follow-up item to this, is that there's a code change. But however, like I said, that can't be retroactively imposed on this fault by the city.
And in this instance, the fire marshal has indicated that he is fine with this granting this exception as long as in the building file there is note that he has told the homeowners, which he has, in certain circumstances of whether his EMS personnel may not be able to get in and they had accepted.
Yeah, see, personally, as a previous fire marshal and his father, to me that's not good enough. I would not support just a recommendation, because there are going to be further people. And not only that, but we do have a duty as a city to respond into a home, and if we can put things in place that can help these individuals out, think about it. We would hate for this house to catch fire or for someone to have an injury or something, and our people can't get in there and fall back on the, well, we kind of strongly recommend it.
Yeah.
When we knew that you know, in theory, I don't know, that's for the attorney to figure out, but we don't live in a county of 400 people and the fire department's 50 minutes away. I mean, we live in a civilized community, and our duty is to keep our people protected. And so, sorry to ramble there. So the driveway's 18%, and we don't allow
30%.
30%, and we allow
to the third. I won't say 36.
Where's short?
It's short portion.
36.
Yeah. So 30 I love the Taylors. My bishop. Probably be having a discussion next time. I'll really talk with him. But I would say, as a compromise, you want to build the stairs and the council. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I would be okay with the 30%. But if not, like I say, it doesn't go both. You can't get it both ways. You can't say I want my thing to be 30%, and I don't want to let EMS, help EMS get into my home. It's more of a, okay, I get that there's a 30% grade, and I'm asking for variance, and I'm willing to give up this in order to get that variance. It's just a give and take thing. But to be able to get by an ordinance and not have safety built into it,
that's one of the struggles, and one of the other struggles that we have is that we already have other homes in the city that are in the same situation that don't have stairs. And so the fight with that is, without going so into too much detail, but the owners have indicated that they are prepared to battle with us over this legally, because we have other non-compliant homes that we have required stairs for.
And
there's no code that we can enforce,
yeah,
other than, I guess, fire
control. Well, the code we can enforce is, sorry, but your driveway doesn't meet.
Let's,
there again, Bishop, forgive me, but you don't meet code. I'm sorry, you don't meet code. How do you battle you don't meet code?
Well, because we don't have code.
We have code for 30%.
We do. That allows the city council to grant an exception. Yeah, that's
what this is tonight. But the city, the chief building official doesn't currently have that ability to say, you don't need code, we're going to grant an exception, and in order to get the exception, you have to do A, B, and C. Right. And so that's what we're missing.
So now, I guess Matt Sago could, but we as a city cannot.
Yes. So I'm willing to go talk to Matt Booth fire marshal and have that conversation of what do you have in terms of your enforcement that can make put such a warrant on the homeowner? Because to my knowledge, he wasn't willing to go that far. So maybe that's something really pressing for that.
Mr. Wright, you're raising your
A couple of issues. If the city has a law and we don't enforce it and then someone's harmed, then the city does incur potential liability. But here, in this instance where there's not really a law on the stairs, if we don't enforce it, I thought about this more, I talked about this more earlier, I think the chances for city liability are very low. Also, as the mayor and chairman of the resident who is very aware of our disapproval and the risks, and I think is frankly anxious to listen to those risks. And so I think it's really, we do have, I don't think we have legal authority there to indicate if they have any challenge. I do think on the scope, we do have some. I think, given they have gone forward and created plans, I think the cost would be substantial, to change it at this point. So I think that's really the only an issue or the part of the loss.
And I would add to that that the homeowner has indicated their willingness to accept their understanding. They understand the limitations of possibly in the public safety responding to their home.
Mr. Mott, kind of planning.
Yeah. Let me finish my thought on that. My one concern though is that this concern, if it's not addressed by the current homeowner, but let's see what most of it says, that future home buyers have the ability to discern the same concern in the due diligence process of purchasing.
Yes. Let me
throw one thing out just that covers this. If my house catches fire, the last thing I want to do, or what I want, is for the fire department to come in and put that fire out. And the reason is because I'd rather burn down and get a brand new house rather than rebuild a apartment burn house. So if these individuals can't have fire and whatnot respond, then I as a citizen should be able to say, if my house catches fire, I'm going to stand at the beginning of my cul-de-sac and I'm going to say, stop, let it burn. Because that's basically what I'm hearing is that we're allowing someone to waive their ability to allow EMS and fire to come in.
I don't know if it's weighed as much as recognize that there might be.
Regardless, if they can come out and say, you know what, we want to put in a blockade so that it makes it difficult for police and fire, and that's another one, police. What if you need police and police officers can't get up and do into there? They'll figure out a way to get there, but when seconds count. But there again, if we're going to let them say, we'll allow you not to put in access so that it hinders the emergency response. There again, hopefully my house never catches fire. However, if it does, I want it to burn down. It's not worth. Been there, done that. Seen 100 of these kind of homes. You don't want a house that's been burned and then. And then rebuild with burned stuff. It's like crashing your car and thinking once it's fixed, it's going to be a brand new car. It never is.
And I just go back to, I hear what you're saying. The hard part is we already have other homes that are in the same situation.
We're in a pickle. I get that.
Yeah.
I get that.
Just a thought on that kind of question when they're talking about city liability in this instance. If, in fact, the home was to catch fire and a host crew is not able to respond, and the fire is to develop and compromise properties to the side of the home, would the city have liability for that type of an incident?
But the fire marshal is not concerned about fire. That wasn't his concern.
We do keep talking about the fire, but it was really EMS response.
Yeah.
Well, he did say he would not permit a hose crew to go up that driveway to respond to a fire in the home. That's where I was.
So I have a legitimate question. I'm wondering how many times this circumstance actually happened. So these people want to get in and out of their driveway, right? They're probably going to keep it cleared of snow when we have a snow event. if they're getting in and out of their driveway, the possibility that an EMS truck can get up there is probably pretty high. So, I mean, I know they don't want to be stuck down on the sidewalk. I'm thinking they're probably going to keep their driveway clear. That's just a guess. I would if I wanted to get in and out of my driveway. So if they're taking on that liability and saying, look, we understand there's a chance they can't get to us, if they want the EMS to come, they're probably going to keep their driveway clear. If they want guests to come to their front door, they're probably going to keep their driveway clear. I'm just assuming. I don't know them. But so I think the actual times when this is a real possibility are it's super slim that this is going to happen. I don't know. Does anyone feel differently about that?
I do, because there again, accidents and responses happen 24/7, 365. You never know when that snowstorm is going to come.
It's true, middle of the night.
You're the one that's calling 911. It just, it's Murphy's Law.
So the question for the council is whether or not you're willing to fight this. That's really what you're voting on today. I'm not. I mean, I think they understand the liability. They're willing to take that on themselves. They've asked for an exception. We don't have a code that forces them to have steps. We have other steep driveways in the city. I don't know. I'm inclined to agree with.
Yeah, I think I'm on that side too. And if we do look at code for this, I'd like to see code that would require the retrofitting of the sale of the home to become compliant. Something along those lines. I don't know if that's
can possible. We do that?
That's an interesting proposal. Should the home change hands, can you require an upgrade to be compliant?
No, I think so.
An app?
Yep. So what was the, was there a potential option to see firefighters requirements.
That's an option that we can look at, but that didn't.
I think that goes back to again, are you willing to fight it?
Yeah.
That's the question. Mr. Ray.
As the mayor said, I mean, the record shows that there are other, you know, places with it, and so we have a case that it's unequal, you know, enforcement. So,
Are those new homes, though? I mean, how long have they been around?
2005?
Yeah, we're talking about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, just because it was okay to do it 15 years ago doesn't mean it's okay. I mean, in 30 years, if someone wants to do it, can we say, hey, you know what? 45 years ago, the city allowed the Joneses to do this, and I'm going to fight it if I don't get my way.
Not if we have code, which is why we
want to
get the code.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, if I were to go with this, I would definitely want the code.
I agree.
As well.
We do have another driveway that is recently constructed. It's not near this out of compliance, but it is out of compliance.
By how much?
It's in the 16%.
Yeah, that's a lot less than 30.
Yeah.
So the council approved out.
No. This is kind of the first time that it's really come to a head. So that's why I say that. Just because the city has made a mistake in the past doesn't mean that we have to keep repeating the mistake. And when we know that we're making a mistake, we can draft code, we can do what we can to rectify it and give staff the tools necessary to address these situations. Because I think just 12% driveway, I mean, they're common in the city, they're all over. So I don't believe our current code, the slopes there that are required, really lend itself to hillside development. It really doesn't. The way that the homes are built up here, you have, in some cases, you have to have a steep driveway. However, our current code does not give staff the ability to, or the teeth to say, you can have that steep driveway, but like I said, it comes at a cost. I mean, this is a cost. You have to have a way that we can get into your house in any case of emergency. That's what we're missing today. As a city, we're missing that. Now, if the fire marshal has something that in his toolbox that gives him that ability, I'm not aware of it because he's been on the site now twice and has not raised that. So that's where I would say I'll ask and pursue that end. But to me, it maybe looks like a dead end just because he's well aware of the situation, having been on site in two separate occasions, before the driveway was poured and after the driveway was poured. So I'm at a loss here.
I respect everybody's decision, and I support whatever you guys do 100%, but with my background in public safety, I can't, in all good consciousness, I cannot support this. So my line is no. If I knowingly know that there is a house that is being built, that there is going to possibly be an issue with responding into that house to get proper EMS, fire, police, whatever care, I can't support that. It's in my DNA. I'm sorry. It's just where I come from.
I understand. Let me pursue that.
But it sounds like you do have three that are.
Let me ask. I mean, what is your you're more versed in this than
because I.
But what is your solution?
I've been in those situations where it's seconds count, mm-hmm. and think of there again. I think of the Taylors, not just them, but their children, and I think of me and my family. They're, like I say. My solution, build the stairs. But that's not here nor there. So my thing is, you know, but there again, you know, I come at it at a different angle. I would put, you know, if I was building a brand new house, I'd have a fully sprinkled, I'd have, you know,
well,
proper fire insurance on
it. I think the concerns are the same between you and staff and the council. I really think that everyone's concerned about the safety of the occupants in the home, whether it's the tailors or the future owner. My hesitation here is that I have no, like I said, I have no tool that says you have to build steps. And that's where I'm lacking. I don't have a way to retroactively enforce that either.
Right.
That's the weird problem I get. And so
what I'm going for is yes. To fund the legal battle and do not grant the exception.
I wish we had some stairs too, but we can't enforce them code. I mean, yeah, and if it were my house, there'd be stairs, but we can't enforce building stairs. I have a 12. My driveway is 12, right?
Yep.
And I have
10 steps. And a half.
Oh, I'm 2.5, thank you. I accept because we realize that's going to be an issue for people, so I didn't want them or put them in anyway. So,
does someone want to make a motion on this?
You don't want my motion.
I'll make a motion that we approve an exception for the driveway slope located at 10090 North Lakeshore Drive and to direct staff to propose a code amendment to address driveway slopes.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Councilmember Ellsworth. Is there any further discussion? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Nay.
Motion passes 3-1. We will move on to item number 9, which is review action on request for qualification for legal services.
Yes. As you know, back in September, the RFQ for legal services, we did get 7 responses received. From that time, we took the 7 responses, narrowed down to 4 that the committee selected about among staff and council members. Councilmember Smith was involved as well. We interviewed 4 candidates, those candidates being Caldwell Woodley, Kurt McConkey, Jones Waldo, and TJ. From that time, the committee discussed their observations, kind of how they felt about each candidate. I think all 4 candidates we could agree on were well qualified to represent the city in terms of municipal law, some in areas stronger than others. And so it really came down to, for me at least, I'm speaking for myself, came down to 2 items, one being the financial impact on the city's budget going forward in the long term, and 2, how comfortable I felt like we would be able to work with the staff and elected officials with the proposed attorney. With Councilmember Miller, Councilmember Anderson, and Mayor Reese being part of that committee, I would invite them to share any of their thoughts. I know that there were 2 firms that we really narrowed the discussion down to, which were Kurt McConkey and BTJD, both having similar think, municipal backgrounds. Yeah, we obviously have been working with Kirkland County since 2015, and I feel like they've done a good job representing the city, representing the city's best interest. However, I want to say that BTJ came really prepared to discuss Cedar Hill, so they did a, I felt like they did a great job doing their homework and showed a lot of interest. So there were two firms that I felt like really presented themselves well and differentiated themselves more for the interview.
I would say, interviewing the four firms, that all of them seem qualified to do the job. I think that was clear. We whittled it down to Kurt McConkey, who's in our council, who has experience with our city. Obviously, Mr. Wright lives in our city, which is advantageous as well. With BTJD, Mr. Hall also came in very prepared. He had done a lot of research and knew a lot about Cedar Hill's situation, information that he researched. He was well prepared. When we talked about the service that we received being equivalent, that the main issue was the cost. That's what the residents are going to ask about. That's what the residents are going to point at. They're not going to say, hey, did you hire the most prestigious firm in the state or whatever? They're going to say, okay, you know, do they do a good job and how much do they cost? And if we can have somebody who does a good job and can save some taxpayer dollars, then I think that's the direction we should go. Tipping it towards the recommendation of BTJD was based on the understanding that more was included in their retainer. Some things that would have been designated as litigation under Kirkland and Honkey were designated under just the general counsel retainer. So I think we can get, not only is the monthly retainer or flat fee, however you want to call it, a good price, but more is included in that. So, you know, it wasn't a clear cut decision, or I should say, where it was obvious that it should be BTJD, but when we really broke it down, I think that that's what the subcommittee was able to conclude.
No, I echo everything you've said. The only thing I want to add is that BTJD also gave us the option to assess a little farther down the road. Are you using all of the hours that you're paying for? If not, let's back up the fee, or if we're using more, we can adjust that. So I appreciated that they were flexible in looking at the fee that they were charging us monthly. If we weren't using our hours that they anticipated us using, then they would reduce the fee.
I would echo all of that. The only thing I would add is that it was clear from our discussion that this was not a concern with the quality of legal counsel that we're receiving at this point, or any relationship concerns. That everything we've been very fortunate to have good representation for quite some time. For us, it was, as we've been talking about the budget as a council, recognizing that things are getting tighter, that just like with Wilkinson's outdoor maintenance, that we're just looking at every single line item, every single expense, and saying, does what makes sense for a city of our size? What can we afford to do? What can we justify to our residents? And so, as it was said to Councilmember Miller and Councilmember Anderson, it's our understanding from this process that we can get more under retainer, thereby lowering our legal expenses, our annual legal expenses.
Let me just add one more thing. We switched over to, we switched over to Kirk and Funky in 2015. We negotiated a rate that was based on hours.
20
hours a month. And our utilization of that, so you paid a basic retainer, I believe it was $3,600.
$3,600.
And that got you 20 hours. Their original proposal was for $1,500 for current pay. Our utilization of that 20 hours was far beyond the 20 hours on the scale. So if the city goes to a council that is based on an hourly pool of, or pool of time that you get to use every month. I feel like myself, mayor, and the council have to be very cognizant of how we use that time, because there's time spent in the planning commission, there's time spent in city council meetings, and there's time spent in staff meetings. So when you start chipping away at those hours, you just look at what's left and see what's the biggest priority for the city. So I know that for myself, I can speak for myself, that it's going to be a matter of prioritizing what the attorney needs to look at, and that may mean that some things need to be delayed. Some items, some code changes, if they're not immediately pressing, they say, okay, well, we'll look at that next month, because it's not a major issue right now, but we want to get it done. So we'll put it in the queue. I think that's just me looking at it and thinking about it, because while there is BTJD did bring up the idea that every 6 months you can look at your hours, and if you're utilizing them, if you're not utilizing all your hours, we'll hold the house down. However, if you're overutilizing the hours, there will be a reciprocal increase. So you have to just understand that going into it.
Agreed. And I would say that the original agreement with Kurt McConkie at 20 hours for $3,600, it was bumped up. It was a former council, nobody here, but it was bumped up because of disagreements with the council that were continually getting the attorney involved. And that is something that I hope, as a moving forward, everyone can agree that whenever we reach out to the attorney, we'll go through either myself or Chandler, so we can make sure that we're keeping those hours where they need to be.
The mayor and I have talked about actually establishing policy that dictates how the city attorney has to be used. And I hate to get down into the weeds like that, but if the financial aspect is something that needs to continually be considered, then how that 20 hours gets used needs to be probably at the discretion of the direction of the elected officials. So, you know, I think you'll have to be very involved in what it's to the attorney and what their county time is.
I'm assuming everybody doesn't agree with that.
Absolutely. So my thoughts are, you know, I really appreciate it, Kurt McConkie, as far as Joel and David have been. In all honesty, we've gone through some legal things where we've had to bring in some of their other attorneys, will not mention names, was not impressed. I think that or other words, we kind of got stable on a couple of things. And yeah, you know, I favored Joel, but we need good litigators that can come in and who was the smart attorney? We need a guard dog like that guy. And if we can get that out of, yeah, because our attorney is no match for Bruce Barrett, in my opinion, just simply, strictly my opinion. If I was to hire one of those two, it would be no question who I'd hire. And I don't see any change in that. And if we're going to pay X amount more to get the exact same service, I can't support that, because that's... Hopefully we don't have any more. Hopefully we're to the point where we don't have any more, you know, lawsuits going. I mean, there always will be something right there.
There's always something in
there. But for the most part, we're built out now. And but yeah, we need someone to be able to go up to the likes of Bruce Baird and some of those other high profile attorneys. So
that's Mr. Wallace.
Yeah, perfect. I think so too. I was
impressed with BTJ. Yeah, and furthermore, you know, with Councilmember Miller here, with his expertise in being an attorney, I gotta go with his lead. And the mayor is the most brilliant politician I know. And so whatever she says, except for letting the tailors get.
He wants to be.
For not doing the stairs. I support everything she said and have recommended that she goes into state and possibly even federal politics. And would support her.
Yep.
Would support her 100%. So.
Well, thank you. Councilmember Ellsworth, you can't top that. So you want to try?
I can't talk about that. I just wanted to actually just say thank you guys for digging in and getting a good recommendation. This is really valuable to the city. I think that we're looking at a good direction.
And I will echo that. I appreciate everybody that was on the committee. It was a lot of hours of discussion and everyone showed up and participated. That was very appreciated, so thank you. I will take a motion.
I'll make a motion that we award a professional services contract for legal services to BTJD and authorize the mayor to execute said contract.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Miller. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Move on to our last item, which is a review action on the ordinance setting the time and place of the regular city council meetings for 2020.
So you have the proposed schedule in your packet. We have only one meeting scheduled for April, June, November, and December.
Yeah, I won't be able to make it.
You can come for fun, Ben.
No, I didn't expect an audience. So if you're looking at those dates, it's still the first and third Tuesdays of every month. I don't think that there's any exceptions to that. Colleen, is there any changes? No. Yes, we're noticing the regularly held council meeting at 7. There still will be a work session, typically at 6 o'clock. It's not being shown here, but we do notice that. Any questions about the proposed schedule or any recommended changes?
I'll take a motion.
Okay. I move that we accept this. I make the motion that we accept the calendar as written.
All right. Motion made by Councilmember Bailey. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Miller. And is an ordinance, so we'll do roll call. Councilmember Bailey?
Aye.
Councilmember Miller?
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth?
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson? Aye. Motion passes unanimously. That is the last item, but I do again want to just thank Ben for the last 4 years. It's been wonderful to work with you. We are going to miss you. And you are welcome to come visit us anytime.
Yeah. I may pop up once in a while.
I would say. Oh, I'm so sorry. Sorry, we have to back up a little bit. Thank you, Councilmember Ellsworth, for pointing out to me. We actually need that ordinance number read as part of the motion. So let's go back to item number 10. If you can.
Does
anybody
have
it up? It's right here. I'm done.
I move to adopt ordinance 12-3-2019A, an ordinance setting the time and place for regular meetings of the City Council of the City of Cedar Hills.
Okay. Motion made by Councilmember Bailey. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilmember Miller. Councilmember Bailey.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. All right, now I will take a motion to adjourn. Motion made by Councilmember Bailey. Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
Everyone's
second. Councilmember Ellsworth, all those in favor?
Aye.
All right, you're adjourned.
Yep. All right. I saw that.